It's Encounter on the Voice of America. Encounter on the Voice of America brings together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. With today's guests and the topic for Encounter, here is Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, a preview of a post-Karzai Afghanistan. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. The votes for Hamid Karzai's successor have officially been cast. Despite the threat of Taliban violence, more than 7 million Afghans flocked to the polls on April 5th to vote for their next president. The election marks the country's first democratic transfer of power. Ashraf Ghani, a former finance minister educated in the United States, and former Afghan foreign minister Abdullah Abdullah are seen as the frontrunners. Zalmay Rusal, believed to be the favorite of Hamid Karzai, is trailing far behind. There have been allegations of fraud as well as complaints of a shortage of ballot papers that prevented people from voting, but the troubles don't appear to be on the scale of those in 2009. Afghanistan's Independent Election Commission says more than 45% of ballots have been tallied, but that a partial vote count cannot be released until at least 20 of 34 total provinces are counted. A final result is not expected until mid-May. If none of the candidates gets more than 50% of the vote, a runoff will take place. The United States is watching the outcome of the race closely and is hopeful that whoever wins will sign the already negotiated bilateral security agreement, which President Karzai had refused to sign, despite a unanimous vote in the country's Loya Jirga. Both leading candidates have said they would sign it, which would allow some American troops to remain in Afghanistan in a training and advisory role after 2014. Well, for more on the election's outcome, its bearing on chances for Afghan reconciliation, and implications of the election for Afghanistan's future ties with its regional neighbors, the United States and the West, we turn to two distinguished analysts. Michael Kugelman is a senior program associate for South and Southeast Asia at the Wilson Center here in Washington, and Ahmad Majidiar. He's a senior research associate at the American Enterprise Institute. And both panelists join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Gentlemen, welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, Ahmad Majidiar, let me begin with you, and let's just get your assessment of the campaign itself, the election turnout, and preliminary results.
The election was quite successful, and the only major problem that we had was the unexpectedly high number of voters that we had, shortage of ballots indeed. So it was a triumph of democracy over extremism, and also it showed that democracy is gradually taking roots in Afghanistan, because during the campaign season, the candidates, they did not just stay in Kabul or try to just ally themselves with the warlords, but they traveled to different parts of the country. They tried to mobilize the masses. The civil society played a very active part. The women had a very unprecedented role in this election. So there were a lot of good signs.
Turning to you, Michael Kugelman, a triumph of democracy over extremism. How do you see the vote?
Absolutely. I would agree. Almost 60% turnout. That's extraordinary, given what everyone was expecting. That's about the same percentage of Americans that voted in the last presidential election here in the U.S. I would say, though, that it's important to acknowledge that there's another narrative here. On the one hand, yes, it was a relatively peaceful election. People came out in droves to vote, particularly women, which is really significant. But also, in the days after the election, you started to hear a different story of areas outside of Kabul, outside of the major cities, in rural areas, areas that are more remote and more insecure. Unfortunately, there, turnout was not quite as high, and to the extent that violence occurred, and the Taliban did launch a number of attacks, mostly in these rural areas, turnout was a bit lower, and we've heard stories in the last few days of essentially polling stations being open in these areas, but no one actually showing up, except once in a while some men would show up with bags of voting cards and stuff them in, and the assumption is that there was essentially some ballot stuffing going on. So yeah, very much a success, very much a triumph for democracy just because of the large turnout and the fact that so many people came out defiantly going against what the Taliban wanted them to do.
So back to you, Ahmed Majidiar. Assuming that no candidate will get the 50%, there will be a runoff. Talk about the mechanics of that and the potential for delay for results, how that may harm or not the outcome and the future.
The Election Commission will announce the preliminary results on April 24 and the final results that after that some of the fraud allegations and other complaints are addressed will be announced on May 14. And once that is announced, then the two leading candidates, if none of them has gotten 50 plus 1% of the vote, then they will go and runoff. And in my opinion, it's very much likely that they will go to a runoff.
Let's talk about these two leading candidates, Ghani and Abdullah Abdullah. How would you characterize them? How different will they be from Hamid Karzai? Presumably, the United States will have a better relationship than the one with Karzai, which has been rather tense, to say the least.
Both have worked in the administration of President Karzai over the past 12 years. Abdullah Abdullah was a foreign minister, and then he ran against President Karzai in 2009 election, and he was the leading contender. And Mr. Ghani, he was the head of the transition process over the past 4 years, and that also helped his campaign because he traveled extensively to all the 34 provinces of the country. In the past decade, they both also have had very good relationship with the United States as well. And during their campaigns, they made it clear that they will sign the bilateral security agreement as they just take office. And they both have also stressed the importance of having good relations, not just with the United States, but also with other NATO partners. So whoever wins the election, I think that he will prove to be a very good partner for the United States.
Back to you, Michael Kugelman. Would you agree that whoever wins will have a good relationship with the United States and perhaps even better than the one with Hamid Karzai, who has been a bit eccentric, to say the very least?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the U.S. relationship with Afghanistan can only go up just because it had become so toxic in the last few months, in the last year or so, really because of what seems to be personal animosities between Karzai and President Obama. Certainly, either Ghani or Abdullah would be leaders that the United States could work with for the reasons we've already heard. I mean, Ashraf Ghani, of course, lived in the United States for a number of years working for the World Bank. Abdullah Abdullah, a very respected statesman, his foreign minister. And of course, at the end of the day, either of these individuals would sign a bilateral security agreement with the United States. So for all these reasons, I think that the U.S. government would be very supportive of whoever the leader is and would be happy and eager to work with him and get this relationship back on track.
Back to you, Ahmed Majidiar. Of course, Karzai will no longer be in the limelight, but many say that he will play a role. And each of these candidates have said that he would have some influence in their administrations. How do you see Karzai's role after the election?
I think that Karzai will remain relevant to the Afghan politics for a period of time. That's because he has been just the face of Afghanistan over the past 12 years. And also during this past decade, he has built a network of allies all over the country. He's also an influential leader in southern Afghanistan. So no matter who wins the election, might seek advice and help from President Karzai to extend his writ from Kabul to the rest of the country. But that depends on how President Karzai handles the remaining process of the elections. If he interferes a lot, if he tries to just sideline one candidate, then that candidate might not work with President Karzai very closely. But President Karzai has clearly stated that he wants to just advise the next president, and other candidates also have shown interest in having him in the Afghan political arena for some time.
So, Michael Kugelman, do you think that Hamid Karzai will respect that he will, in fact, play an advisory role and not necessarily try to influence things in an inordinate fashion that could be perhaps deleterious?
I think any post-election influence he has would be benign. Certainly, he has a reputation, a personality that would suggest that he would want to be involved in the post-election dispensation. And, of course, there have been reports that he's building this big house near the presidential palace. So that suggests that he's not in any mood to just quietly disappear into the night and go away forever. Certainly, I think that given he's a mercurial figure, and certainly there have been various issues, but I think that he's going to respect the Constitution and he's not going to try to do anything nefarious, and he's going to let democracy play itself out.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Michael Kugelman. He's a senior program associate for South and Southeast Asia at the Wilson Center, from whom you just heard, and Ahmed Majidiar. He's a senior research associate at the American Enterprise Institute. We're talking about a post-Karzai Afghanistan in the wake of an election which marks the country's first democratic transfer of power. This is a reminder that you can listen to Encounter online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/encounter. And here's a shout-out to a loyal listener, Aniobi Chika, from Port Harcourt, Nigeria. Well, back to you, Ahmed Majidiar. Of course, you and Michael said that the first order of business would be to sign the bilateral security agreement, which, of course, is extremely critical, allowing for a residual force to remain after December this year. What are the other challenges, the first order of business besides that, for the next president?
The next president is taking office at a very critical juncture. Of course, most of the foreign troops, if not all, will withdraw by the end of this year. All of the security responsibilities and also governance responsibilities will be transferred to the Afghan authorities. The foreign funding to Afghanistan will shrink dramatically after this year. So the next president will have to deal with this transition period. Of course, the Afghan economy is not in a very good shape. Unfortunately, the international community has failed to build a very strong indigenous economy, and the World Bank is already predicting a slowdown of the Afghan economy after this year. And the next problem will be to keep the unity in Afghanistan. That's one credit which goes to President Karzai, that he kept all different ethnic groups together. So no matter which candidate wins the election, another task for him will be not to just exclude the other party, but try to just include it in the government and make sure the next government is inclusive. And there are other challenges. The Taliban is still a very potent force. They're enjoying the sanctuaries on the other side of the border. They have presence in eastern and southern Afghanistan. And their strategy right now is just to wait foreign troops to leave and then after that try to just come back and topple the government. So the level of violence will increase. And also the Afghan security forces have made tremendous progress over the past 4 years, but they still remain heavily dependent on the coalition when it comes to support roles, especially funding. $6 billion is needed to sustain the current number of Afghan forces. So they will need foreign funding for that. So that's why it's important that the international community remains engaged and committed to Afghanistan post-2014 until the country moves towards stability and stand on its own feet.
Michael Kugelman, anything to add or subtract to that long and important list of priorities after the bilateral security agreement is signed? How do you see the challenges?
Yeah, I think there are three top challenges, and essentially they've been mentioned. One is the economy, which is in bad shape, and there needs to be action taken there immediately. The other is the security situation, for the reasons we've heard. Finally, corruption is a huge issue. This is a big challenge that the last government in Afghanistan had said it was going to be trying to focus on, but it's hard to find substantive accomplishments, achievements on the ground. And I think that you could argue that one of the main reasons why the insurgency has continued is not just because of the havens, the sanctuaries in Pakistan, but also the fact that the corruption and the perceived corruption in the government has made the Afghan government very unpopular among many Afghans, and the government has not convinced the Afghan masses that it provides a better alternative to the Taliban. So it's important for whoever the next leader is to come out and make some very strong, emphatic statements about needing to get into the corruption issue. I think that could really help build legitimacy among the Afghan people.
How do you see that issue, Ahmed Majidiar, this corruption issue? Do you agree with Michael that it's a serious problem?
Absolutely, corruption is an issue, but other than the political will, which President Karzai has never shown over the past 10 years, one of the reasons for the massive corruption in Afghanistan is the weakness of the Afghan institutions. So the next president has to work on strengthening these institutions in order to curb corruption. And working on the economy, working on the rule of law, they are just a prerequisite to fighting corruption.
Let me continue with you, Ahmed Majidiar, and let's talk about the threat from the Taliban. Certainly, it still remains, as you both said. Talk about their relative strength, their source of support in the country. How much of a threat do they continue to pose?
In conventional military terms, the Taliban does not pose a very serious threat to topple the Afghan government once the foreign troops leave. As we saw in the elections, that they did their level best to disrupt the process. But other than some suicide attacks or random attacks, they could not do any major attack to disrupt the process. So that shows that the Taliban are not as strong as people are just portraying them. Definitely the surge of troops over the past 4 years ago weakened the Taliban, and it was clear that the turnout was much higher than 2009. The polling stations opened in areas that were completely under the Taliban in 2009. So that was one major success story from the surge. The second success story of the surge was the strengthening and equipping and training of the Afghan security forces, who were entirely responsible for the security of this election. And with very minimal assistance of the foreign troops, they provided adequate security for this election. So there are a lot of success stories on the Afghan government part, and it also showed that the Taliban is weakened, but that they still remain forced to be reckoned with. And once the foreign troops leave, they will try to just fill this vacuum, and we have to make sure that they cannot.
Michael Kugelman, do you also agree that the Taliban still remains a force to be reckoned with, even though they have been weakened? And what about the fact that, in contrast to surge of troops, we're talking about drawdown now by the end of the year. So will that drawdown of troops encourage them, embolden the Taliban? And are the Afghan security forces capable of repulsing the Taliban?
Unfortunately, I fear that they're not. We've heard, and I agree with this, that Afghan security forces have made tremendous improvements, and particularly tactically operational. They're winning a lot of victories on the battlefield. But the challenges lie with holding territory that they've actually gained. And also there's a lot of issues with logistics, transport, that type of thing. And that's where a residual troop presence could really help. For me, the reason why the Taliban still remains such a big threat, even though it's not a potent fighting force per se. The thing with the Taliban is that it has friends in high places, so to speak. It has the advantage of having some very powerful allies, whether they be the Haqqani network, which is officially a branch of the Taliban, but it has its own commanding corps. And also the fact that some level of connection, some level of linkages to the Pakistani security establishment, that, in my view, makes the Taliban a lot more potent than it would be if it were simply operating on its own. And I fear that, you know, these linkages are not necessarily going to be severed anytime soon.
Well, that leads me to ask you, Ahmed Majidiar, about the impact of the elections and, of course, the drawdown of U.S. troops on relations with Pakistan, that is, Afghan-Pakistan relations, because we know that there are elements within Pakistan that fuel the Taliban.
Your question just reminded me of a conversation I had with a top Pakistani security official last time I was in Islamabad. And when I asked him that why some circles within the government, they are supporting the Taliban, they are not investing instead in the legitimate Afghan government, his response was that you're talking about the Afghan government now. We are not sure that this government will be in place after 2014. So that makes this election also very much important for the Pakistanis. They're waiting for the outcome of the election, that whether this election will be a chaos, will be a disaster, or whether this will help Afghanistan move towards stability gradually. So if the latter is the case, if this election helps Afghanistan to become more stable, then I think that that will help to change some of these perceptions in Pakistan and to convince some of the people inside the military and inside the spy agency, the ISI, that supporting the Taliban will not be the good option, and instead they should develop good relationship with the government of Afghanistan.
What do you think about that, Michael Kugelman? You suggested that the elements in Pakistan, the ISI, etc., the Haqqani network are supporting Taliban. Do you think that if the election, in fact, does go smoothly, the new president pursues a wise path, will that have a positive impact on Pakistan?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't. I guess I've gotten jaded in my old age. But in my view, we have to talk about India in this context. The Pakistani security establishment, regardless of what's happening on the ground in Afghanistan with the Afghan political system, the Pakistani security establishment will continue to work with or provide sponsorship to the Afghan Taliban so long as India remains an enemy of Pakistan. And that's because the Pakistani security establishment, or elements of it, particularly the ISI, sees the Afghan Taliban and the Haqqani network essentially as assets, as strategic assets, to help reduce the influence or contain the influence of India in Afghanistan. And unfortunately, the fact that India has intensified its engagement with the Kabul government in recent years, I think, has concerned Pakistan even more. I mean, a few years ago, the Indians signed a strategic partnership with the Afghans, which I think is good for stability. It's allowed Indian development assistance to intensify. It's allowed India to to provide training and advising to the Afghan military. But this is regarded, despite what you may hear in public statements from Islamabad, I think this is regarded with some degree of alarm. And this all suggests that this pattern of continuing to look the other way or, at the worst, outright support the Afghan Taliban, I think that's, this pattern is going to continue.
Well, Michael, you always have a way of anticipating my next question, and I was going to ask about relations with India. So let me get you to respond, Ahmed Majidiar. What do you make of what Michael said about even if the election goes well and that reassures Pakistan and perhaps would make them more amenable to working with the government and less supportive of Taliban? So how do you see this whole India factor, which does seem to alarm Pakistan?
Afghanistan and India, historically, they've always had very friendly relations, with the exception of the Taliban period. And that's regardless of what government was in office in Kabul. And in my opinion, if you're conducting any opinion poll across the country, you'll find that India will be the most popular country in Afghanistan. And over the past 10 years, too, we see that the Indian government has helped tremendously with the reconstruction projects, building hospitals, building roads, helping the civil society. But unfortunately, the Pakistani influence has been negative. It has been to support the Taliban, other extremist groups who are destroying those hospitals and clinics and health centers and schools. So that's why the Afghans will always just favor India to Pakistan. But at the same time, they also understand that Pakistan's influence is much more than India in Afghanistan, whether that would be positive or negative. And also for establishing security in Afghanistan, the next government will need the help and assistance of the Pakistani government. That's why during the campaigning season, we didn't see a lot of anti-Pakistani sentiments or rhetoric from the leading candidates, that they know that despite the bad actions that the Pakistani military establishment does by supporting the Taliban and other extremists, they still need the help of the Pakistani government to contain the insurgency or to bring peace to the country. So I do believe that the next government will try to improve relations with Islamabad, but whether that will succeed or not, that remains an open question.
Lastly, let me ask you, Michael Kugelman, what about prospects for the international community to maintain its support? Because both of you said that's critical. And also, I'm curious about the role of women. You both said that they came out in droves to vote and they've made many strides over the past decade. Is that at risk, do you think, either because of the Taliban or maybe just to some inherent chauvinistic tendencies? How do you see the role of women henceforth? Mm-hmm.
For all the critics of this U.S.-led intervention in Afghanistan over the last, 13 years or so, I think that the improved status of women is one of the major achievements. I mean, look at how things have changed since 2001. It's extraordinary. All the girls in school, the fact that women are just out there in the public sphere more than they had been, and just to see them, lines of women standing in line to vote on election day was extraordinary and just an incredible change from how things had been not too long ago. Certainly, with most international troops pulling out, you have to worry that if things get bad, if the security situation deteriorates, it could allow the Taliban to certainly not take over the country again. I don't see that as realistic, but perhaps more realistically, taking de facto control of certain pockets or areas of Afghanistan where it could then impose its version of extremely hardline Sharia law, which of course would affect the status of women and could reverse a lot of the gains of recent years. In terms of the international community, I think that there's a strong desire for the world to try to do what it can to assist Afghanistan. And certainly that doesn't only refer to military support, but it refers to development assistance and civilian assistance. The problem is that can really only be ensured if there's a bilateral security agreement that allows military protection. Because if we go to the so-called zero option, where no international troops remain in Afghanistan, then it'll be very difficult for development workers to feel safe and to feel secure. And it could really curtail the international aid presence in Afghanistan. And of course, also, it's really a bilateral security agreement that would allow civilian aid to continue to flow into Afghanistan. So I think that the international community wants to remain committed, but we can only count on that as a fact if the security agreement is signed.
And the last word to you, Ahmed Majidiar, and you can address this bilateral security agreement because we didn't get into the details earlier, but what are the chances for not it just being signed, but leaving a residual force, some say 10,000. Do you see that as a realistic option with either of these candidates? And how important is that, in your view, for the future of the country to ensure a flow of aid, both development and military? And also, you may want to address the role of women. Can it continue in this positive trajectory?
Unfortunately, President Obama has not announced the number of troops that he's willing to keep in Afghanistan post-2014. And that's a very critical issue because, first of all, it's important for the military mission in the country. If the number is too limited, for example, 2,000 to 3,000 that some people in the White House have suggested, that would not be able to continue helping the Afghan security forces or conduct unilateral counterterrorism operations. We know that in addition to Afghanistan, the U.S. counterterrorism policy in Pakistan too hinges upon the U.S. military presence in Afghanistan. The success of the drones attacks depends on the military presence and also the intelligence assets that the United States has in Afghanistan. So if you're pulling them out, then those drones attacks and any kind of contingency plan for any major terrorist problem inside Pakistan will be undermined. And when it comes to the role of women, I think that the role of women in this election, it was unprecedented. And also the candidates also put a lot of focus on women. They know that it's a very important demographic now. They cannot be just ignored. Even some very conservative and religious candidates of the eight candidates, they were talking about women rights, they were talking about women roles in the society. They may not be absolutely sincere about that, but that shows the change, that they cannot ignore the power of women. They know that they matter in democracy and they need to get their vote and they get their support. So this is a very big change.
Very good. And quickly, before I close, Michael Kugelman, do I understand that the number of troops is a decision of the White House and not necessarily the new president, that the new president in Afghanistan would be amenable to any level of troops?
Certainly the Afghan president will want as many troops as the United States is willing to commit. But yes, I mean, that decision will ultimately lie with the White House, which will probably be sparring with the Pentagon over the troop numbers. The Pentagon will want more than the White House is willing to provide, I'm sure.
Well, we'll certainly be following that development in the coming weeks. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. Please stay tuned to the Voice of America for full coverage of the final election results from Afghanistan's historic election. I'd like to thank my guests, Michael Kugelman, he's Senior Program Associate for South and Southeast Asia at the Wilson Center, and Ahmad Majidiar, he's a Senior Research Associate at the American Enterprise Institute. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your great insights. Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Jiang Wong. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.
Encounter on the Voice of America. Encounter on the Voice of America brought together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. Your host was Carol Castiel. Join us again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.